Whatever happened to Britain or the UK or England or whatever they're calling it? We can't even agree on what it's called, but England, the England that if you're over 50, you grew up learning about, the England that controlled the world, the England that ran the largest empire in human history. At the end of World War I, Britain, which is an island in a pretty inhospitable climate, controlled literally a quarter of the Earth's surface, and not controlled in the way the United States controls the rest of the world with an implied threat or with economic ties through trade, but actually controlled with administrators and people sitting at desks with eye shades counting things, like actually controlled a quarter of the Earth's surface. Way more than Rome, way more than the Mongols, way more than anybody ever, or maybe in the future, ever. Britain was the most powerful country in the history of the world. And then 25 years later, it was this kind of sad, soggy welfare state, which is to some extent what it still is, except maybe even a little bit worse. What happened? Well, there are a couple levels on which to think about this. First is just geopolitical. And I guess they spent a lot of money in these wars and the ruling, you know, half the class of Eton 1910 was killed in the trenches or whatever. You can think of a lot of different ways to explain what happened to Britain. The fact remains, however, they won the two biggest wars in human history. They won, and yet they're still greatly diminished and to some extent humiliated. It's like, what is that? So again, the first explanation can be described in economic terms. Well, the United States took over. The British Empire just moved west to its child, the U.S. They just transferred the power and a lot of the gold to this new country, which had its systems and some of its customs. Okay. But there's something kind of deeper, actually. If that were the whole story, then Britain would still be recognizably Britain. The English people would still be recognizably English. They would just be not in charge anymore. They would have less money and less power, but the country would be, by any conventional measurement, thriving, just not running the Bahamas and Hong Kong, you know, Pakistan. But that's not what's happened, actually. After winning the two biggest wars in human history, Britain has shrunken, not just physically, but in some way that's hard to describe. Its culture has changed. Some might say has been destroyed, and it's become something completely different. And what is that? And by the way, why does it matter what it is? Well, it matters because what's happened to Britain, to England, is also happening to many countries in the West. Certainly, its heirs, the Anglosphere, and that specifically would be Australia, New Zealand, the United States, Canada, Ireland. It's happening to those countries, but it's also happening to the rest of Western Europe all at the same time. A bunch of different profound, never seen before phenomena are happening to all of those countries. And again, including ours here in the United States. So it's worth understanding what has happened to Britain. So maybe the best image that describes it is the one that we're about to show you. And in case there's no context in the tape, what you're watching is a woman being arrested outside of an abortion clinic. And keep in mind, as you watch this, she's not being arrested for throwing a firebomb, a petrol bomb, through the window of this abortion clinic in the UK, or even for obstructing access to this abortion clinic. No, she's being arrested and taken to jail for praying outside the abortion clinic. Watch this.
Before I ask you any questions about what's going on today, I have to caution you, which is just your rights, which is you do not have to say anything. It may harm your defence if you do not mention when questioned something that you later on in court, anything you do so may give you evidence. What are you here for today?
Physically, I'm just standing here.
Okay. Why here of all places? I know you don't live nearby.
But this is an abortion something.
Okay. That's why you're standing. Because you standing here part of a protest?
No. I'm not protesting.
Are you praying?
I might be praying in my head.
So I'll ask you once more, will you voluntarily come with us now to the police station for me to ask you some questions about today and other days where there are allegations that you've broken public space of protection?
If I've got a choice, then no.
Okay, well then you're under arrest, okay, on suspicion of failing to comply with the public spaces protection order.
So what is that? It's hard to argue that if your government is arresting people for praying, that you're watching a political phenomenon. Because, of course, praying is not simply a nonviolent act. It's not even a physical act. It can't possibly, at least in secular terms, affect outcomes or harm anyone. Praying for people can never be a crime, but it is a crime in Great Britain, literally a crime. And the woman you saw is not the only person who's been arrested for doing it. So clearly we're watching a spiritual phenomenon here. I mean, there's sort of no arguing it once you see things like that. But what is that spiritual phenomenon and what are its effects on the people of this country? And before we go farther, we should just say that if you visit the UK, as it's now called, or London, its capital and completely dominant city, the first thing you'll notice is it's actually pretty nice. London is, the nice parts of London are as nice or maybe even nicer than any city in the United States, certainly nicer than any city in Canada or Australia. Much nicer, actually. It's a great city filled with lots of happy people. But broadly speaking, this country has changed really, really dramatically, and it's changed in ways that are recognizable. And here's what you recognize. The people of Great Britain are going through a series of crises, and they're all internal. Drug use, alcohol use, their appearance has changed. People are no longer as well kept. The streets, the landscape is not tidy anymore. It's got lots of litter and graffiti in some places. And to technocrats, these are not meaningful measures of anything. Who cares if you've got graffiti? Does that affect GDP? Well, maybe, maybe not. But it's definitely a reflection of how people feel about themselves. People with self-respect do not tolerate public displays of disorder or filth or graffiti or litter because they care about themselves and their family, and they understand intuitively, as every human being does, that once you allow chaos and filth in your immediate environment, you are diminished. So you just don't allow that, and no healthy society does. But all through the West, these are not just features, they're defining features. All Western cities are filled with litter and graffiti and people who look like they didn't bother to get dressed this morning, but are instead wearing their pajamas in Walmart. It's not just in your town, it's everywhere in what we refer to as the West. The point that underlies all of this is a really obvious one that too few people say. This is the behavior of a defeated people. This is what it looks like when you lose. This is what it looks like when you're on your way out to be replaced by somebody else. This is what it looks like to be an American Indian. Now, one thing nobody in the United States ever says about the American Indians, except in the kind of pro forma white guilt way, is these weren't just impressive people. And no, they didn't write the Constitution before we did. These were some of the most impressive people, most self-reliant, most dignified. Read any account of early American settlers, people who were pushing west, who came into contact with Indians, and yes, were often scalped and forced to eat their own genitals and roasted over open fires. I mean, these were cruel people. But even the people who were in danger of being murdered by them respected them because the indigenous Americans had a great deal of self-respect. They had what we call dignity. And now, hundreds of years later, the opposite is true. The poorest people in the United States are American Indians. Why? Because the federal government hasn't given them enough. The federal government is completely in charge of the indigenous economy in the United States and has been for over 100 years. And it hasn't worked. American Indians are still the poorest. Why? Because the Iroquois and the Navajo weren't impressive? No, they were the most impressive. Again, read the account of anyone who dealt with them. Even people who were dodging their arrows thought they were amazing people because they were. And now they are, by many measures, the saddest people in the United States. Why is that? Some inherent genetic predisposition to patheticness? They couldn't deal with modernity? Well, they probably could. They were defeated. They were defeated. And in some deep, the deepest way, they wound up destroying themselves. And it's not unique to them. That's the point. And just to be completely clear, all of this is observed with a great deal of sympathy, not scorn. No one's mocking the American Indians. Everyone should feel bad about it for real. Again, not in a silly white girl guilty way, but in a real way. These are amazing people, greatly diminished. And the reason it's worth remembering is the same thing is happening to the West.
So the beauty of Thanksgiving is that it celebrates real food. I mean, at the core of the holiday is actual food, not synthetic garbage, the kind that is almost irresistible. So wouldn't it be nice if the country embraced, if all of us embraced actual food during the rest of the year, ditching your standard and truly disgusting American chip brands for chips that aren't terrible for you that have only three ingredients? That would be Vandy crisps. That'd be a great place to start. Vandy is about reviving real food, the kind your grandparents ate, and they looked pretty svelte despite the camels they smoked. Why? Because they ate food that wasn't filled with garbage. And in this case, Vandy crisps, three ingredients: pesticide-free potatoes, sea salt, and 100% grass-fed beef tallow. That's it. There's nothing in there that's weird. No seed oils, no mystery chemicals, just actual food. And they taste amazing. If you don't believe it, try the French onion flavor. We just got a new shipment, which go great with our stock from Vandy's sister company, Masa Chips, which clutter our garage until we consume them, which we do. Vandy is offering our audience a Black Friday level offer of 25% off the first purchase. Use the code Tucker for 25% off your first order at VandyCrisps.com or head to MasaChips.com. Simply click the link in the video description, or to make it even easier, scan the QR code for this offer. Or if you don't want to go online, just go to Sprouts Supermarket, your local Sprouts, and they have them both. Stop by and pick up a bag because they're great.
And it makes you realize, especially if you travel a lot, that the problem is not necessarily the immigrants. The problem is what mass migration does to the people who already live there. They're the victims of it in a way that, again, is hard to measure and sometimes hard to notice, but totally real. So you walk through this city, London, and it's been completely transformed by immigration completely. And the numbers are really, really clear. 100 years ago was 100% European white. Now it's less than 40%. Okay, that's massive, unprecedented demographic change. Got it. And the immigrant areas are absolutely poorer than the traditionally white English areas. Absolutely. There's just no question about it. But wealth as measured by the government is not the only measurement. Actually, and this is true in the United States too, lots of immigrants who have a lot less money than the native population seem a lot more balanced and happy, both because this is a huge upgrade for them just in terms of like annual income and standard of living, but it's more than that. They're not defeated. They don't hate themselves. And if you have traditional nationalist opinions in the United States, I can confirm this personally, you're never going to be stopped on the street and screamed at by some Guatemalan who's like, you are racist for having your views on immigration. No, they'll probably agree with you, actually. The only people who ever get mad at you are the people who already hate themselves. And that's always famously some private equity wife or somebody who should be happy about how things are going because they're in the portion of the population that's benefiting from it, but they're not happy. They're angry. What is that? That exact same thing is going on in this country. Exact. And it's part of a very recognizable syndrome, and it's the most destructive of all. History is just filled with examples of people who get invaded and clubbed to death and have their women stolen from them, and they're fine. They're fine. It's the people who feel defeated inside who no longer exist. And that is happening to the West. And it's measurable. What other society hates its own national symbols? It's only happening in the West, only in Great Britain. This is coming to be true in the United States. It's already true in Canada and Australia. What other country finds it embarrassing to fly their national flag? What are you saying if that embarrasses you? You don't hate the flag. You hate yourself. And it's obvious because people who have dignity, self-respect, who believe in their own civilization want to continue it. How do you do that? By talking about it a lot? No. By continuing it through reproduction. No one is preventing the West from reproducing. And people have come up with these conspiracy theories like, oh, they're doing it. No, we're doing it to ourselves. What else is abortion? It's not empowering for women. Of course not. That's absurd. Anyone who believes that is an idiot. Abortion is the way to stop people from reproducing. So is birth control, by the way. Of course. So is convincing people that their dumb job is more important than having kids. It's not. It never will be. Any person who can get clarity for a second will recognize that. It's only about stopping you from having more of you. And is there anything that's a clearer, crystal clear representation of how you feel about yourself than how you feel about having kids? And by the way, it's not just because they're selfish and they want to go on vacation and don't want to pay for children, or they're worried about how much it might cost. Notice that none of these impoverished immigrants living on SNAP and housing subsidies, they don't seem worried about it at all, because they know it'll be fine. By the way, most of the time it will be fine. They're having kids when much more affluent natives are not, because they believe in themselves and their culture, their civilization. They'd like to see it continue. It's the most basic of all human desires. So here in Great Britain, which has about a 40% abortion rate, 40% of all conceived children are killed. Who's doing that? It's not the immigrants, because they don't hate themselves. They're not defeated. They're ascendant. And so they can see the future. They know that they may not live to experience it, but they're still fully human. And they know you plant the tree not because you can bask in its shade, but because your grandchildren will. This is the most obvious of all human instincts and the most basic. But the native population in Britain is not debating abortion, because it's not even a debate here. Everyone agrees it's just an affirmative good, of course, to eliminate your own people. Absolutely. And again, no one's making them do this. They've decided to do that themselves. But now their most enthusiastic campaign is for state-sponsored suicide. They've already done this in Canada. It'll come to the United States. What is that? That's an entire people saying, we should exit the stage. Our time is done. It's over. Let's go. Someone else will take our place. Not the first time that's ever happened. This is what defeated people do. This is what happens when you break people inside. And maybe it'll just reach its terminus. Maybe there's no way to stop it. The great replacement theory. Yeah, a theory. Okay. No, it's the realest thing there is. And it's happening not because unseen hands are orchestrating it, though clearly they are, but because the native peoples of all these countries are participating in it enthusiastically and then enforcing its rules against anyone who questions it. So in Great Britain, if you were to say, wait, what the hell is this? This looks nothing like the country I grew up in. Guess who's going to arrest you? Your fellow Britons, the ones whose great grandparents lived here, the whites. They're the ones enforcing this. They're the ones totally determined to eliminate themselves. Hate to brag, but we're pretty confident this show is the most vehemently pro-dog podcast you're ever going to see. We can take or leave some people, but dogs are non-negotiable. They are the best. They really are our best friends. And so for that reason, we're thrilled to have a new partner called Dutch Pet. It's the fastest growing pet telehealth service. Dutch.com is on a mission to create what you need, what you actually need, affordable quality veterinary care anytime, no matter where you are. They will get your dog or cat what you need immediately. It's offering an exclusive discount, Dutch is, for our listeners. You get $50 off your vet care per year. Visit dutch.com/Tucker to learn more. Use the code Tucker for $50 off. That is an unlimited vet visit, $82 a year, $82 a year. We actually use this. Dutch has vets who can handle any pet under any circumstance in a 10-minute call. It's pretty amazing, actually. You never have to leave your house. You don't have to throw the dog in the truck. No wasted time waiting for appointments. No wasted money on clinics or visit fees. Unlimited visits and follow-ups for no extra cost, plus free shipping on all products for up to 5 pets. It sounds amazing, like it couldn't be real, but it actually is real. Visit dutch.com/Tucker to learn more. Use the code Tucker for $50 off your veterinary care per year. Your dogs, your cats, and your wallet will thank you. So it's with these questions in mind that we decided to sit down with Piers Morgan. Piers Morgan is someone we've known for a long time, cable news host. Had a debate with him last year, ran into him in an elevator in the Middle East, and decided to sit down and had a really spirited and interesting conversation with him, in which I attacked his country with the fury of someone who secretly loves the country and hates what it's become. And so we're back here in his hometown and decided to have this conversation, and it follows in just a second. But before it begins, just want to be super clear about something. Piers Morgan is clearly wedded, has decided to remain wedded to the neoliberal version of the world where you're not allowed to say certain things and you have to repeat certain pieties, and it's all pretty embarrassing, obviously. But in fairness, Piers Morgan has single-handedly done more for free speech, which is disappearing in Great Britain, than any other Briton. He has done more for free speech than any other person in this entire country. Just want to say this out loud because it's absolutely true. And he's done it the old-fashioned way by allowing other people onto his platform, onto his show, to debate. People who have no other venue to say what they think. And you may disagree with 50% and agree with the other 50%. It doesn't even matter. That debate, the real debate about issues that really matter, that nobody else in this country is allowed to talk about, are taking place at scale on Piers Morgan's show. So if you watch this and you think Piers Morgan has no idea what side is up, why is he defending the indefensible? Keep in mind that here, and this is an authoritarian country where disagreement is no longer allowed, you go to jail for it. By the thousands, people go to jail for it every year. He alone is keeping it open. So God bless Piers Morgan. With that, here's Piers Morgan. Piers, thanks for doing this.
Welcome.
For taking time.
Welcome to my city.
Which I've been so mean to, including in a conversation with you last winter in the Middle East. And I'm attacking Great Britain. And I just want to apologize and tell you the truth about how I feel, which is I think that English culture and civilization is the highest level ever achieved by man in history. I really believe that. Everything about it. It's religion, it's language, it's literature. American society has never produced literature. I'm embarrassed to say, like, what the Brits produced. And so it was out of sadness and frustration and a sense of connection to your civilization that I went on the rant about how much I hate it. But it was hate born of frustrated love and concern.
I'm just amazed you're here alive. I didn't think you'd get
it. Well, they're so passive now, and everyone's like bisexual. What are they going to do to me? Nothing. But I just want to add, and I know you love it. You're a product of it. What is it? How would you describe English culture?
I would say it's not as bad as many Americans think it is, and it's not as good as many people hear when they launch impassioned defenses of our country and our culture and the way things have gone would like to pretend it is. It's kind of somewhere in the middle. There's definitely been a significant change in the fabric of the country, in the makeup of the country, in the types of people who've come here, the volume of people who've come here. That's obviously had an effect on what this country is. Now, the debate to be had is whether this has been in totality a force for good or bad. And I took your strident views about it when we met in Saudi. And I pushed back quite hard because I live here half of the year at least, most of that time in London. It's always been a very multicultural city. There's no doubt about that. And I don't walk the streets as Tommy Robinson would like.
It has not always been a multicultural. I actually pulled the numbers. It is not.
In my lifetime.
Very recent. Yeah, maybe lifetime. Right after you were born.
In my lifetime. I was born in the mid-60s. But, you know, the way Tommy Robinson, who has a big following in America, the way he talks about it is not something I recognize. Having said that, as I've always said about him, there are issues that he's raised which are perfectly legitimate. The biggest one is population. You know, in the 50s, we had a population of just under 50 million people. And a lot of the infrastructure, like the National Health Service, the NHS, once lauded as the greatest health system in the world, now has to deal with a population of nearly 70 million. That is a dramatic increase in the volume of people in this country. And the simple truth right now is our public services are creaking at the seams and in some cases, like the NHS, pretty well at breaking point. And that is why there is so much agitation about the simultaneous ongoing issues with immigration, both illegal, with this ridiculous farce of these small boats popping up on the south coast from a channel from France, you know, all the time. When the weather's good, they just stream in hundreds, sometimes thousands a week, illegally into the country, but also legal migration and how we've abjectly mishandled that since really the turn of the century. You can chart it back to the Tony Blair years when they pretty well opened the gates to everyone in Eastern Europe. Way too many people came in way too fast. And then after that, there's just been a complete lack of any form of control. And we now have a situation where they've had to try and put the brakes on legal migration coming in, because 2 years ago we had a net migration in this country of nearly a million people. Now, it's not racist, as some people have tried to brand it, to say that that is alarming. A country like ours, if you don't have an effective border, if you have 50, 60,000 people a year coming in as they are illegally on these boats, and then you have a net migration of legal migrants coming in of nearly a million people, the already crumbling infrastructure is going to come under, obviously, enormously higher pressure. So it's been a series of governments, left and right, I have to say, starting with the Blair government, with what they did with Eastern Europe, and then coming forward to successive Conservative governments, and now the current Labour government, all of whom, in my opinion, have handled this so badly that inevitably we now have a lot of people in the country going, what the hell is going on?
I wonder, though, I mean, everything you said is so clearly true, and it was Tony Blair, really the lowest, probably tied with Boris, but really one of the worst prime ministers, leaders of any country ever. But I wonder, I often hear people say, well, it's about the NHS, National Health Service, it's about the roads, it's about, you know, NHS is like a very new creation. It's a post-war creation. It was never going to work. It's never worked anywhere. The Brits were so kind of pathetically proud of it, but it was the whole thing.
It did work.
But for a time, it worked.
By the way, if you walk out of here and you fall over and you break your leg, you'll get treatment quickly.
That's great. But the health outcomes were never better than the United States. It didn't actually work. But whatever, you could argue it.
But what's so sad is
that for your whole life, you've been told that what is Britain? What is this project about? It's about the National Health Service? I mean, that's kind of aiming a little low. Like, who cares about some bureaucratic structure? What about England? What about the culture? Like, so in my mind, as a P.G. Woodhouse reader lifelong, self-restraint, duty, courage, patriotism rooted in your religious faith, our Lord the King, a phrase that was common until recently. All of that seems to be gone.
Well, hang on. We're still a very majority Christian country, right? Still 40-odd percent of the country are Christians, right? That's a fact. So when I hear America...
Whatever that means. I mean,
well, it means...
You get arrested for praying outside an abortion clinic. That's not a Christian country.
Well, okay, I mean, there are nearly 50% of the country identify as Christian. The more concerning thing for those who have faith is that nearly 40% now have no religious belief whatsoever, right?
Right.
Then we have a lot of other religions. There's a slight amplification of, for example, the number of Muslims in the country.
There are nearly
4 million Muslims in the country, and that represents about 6% of the population. But 43 or 4% of the population are still Christian. So I do think, again, that the over-amplification of the Islam problem, as people put it, or the Muslim problem, has been massively overstated.
Well, that's an op, obviously.
Yeah.
Hate the Muslims. No, we know where that's coming from, obviously.
I don't like it.
I hate it.
In my high street alone, in West London, most of the businesses would have Muslim employees there.
Is hate the Muslims better than hate the Christians or hate the Jews?
It's not the same.
It's the same.
And I've heard you say, and this is the point I come from, hatred is hatred is hatred.
I totally agree.
It doesn't matter who you're hating. The moment you're in the hate game, then I think you're losing whatever argument is you're trying to have.
I totally agree. But moving off from hate and getting back to the world I live in, which is fear and distrust and gut-level loathing, it's the secular people who are the problem. I've never had an argument with a Muslim, with an actual Muslim. I'm from Bangladesh. I'm a Muslim. We probably agree on a lot. It's the secular self-hating whites that stand up from the table and leave when I'm eating with them here. Just saying. And that's true in my country too. But leave that aside, I just sort of wonder, so I'm not hating on the Muslims at all. They're bad Muslims or bad everybody. I just think a country is more than its bureaucratic systems, and certainly more than the NHS, which I will never think is impressive, sorry. Your metric system, which
is pathetic. Think you're wrong about that.
But
you're not wrong about the state of it now. I mean, I'll give an example. What wouldn't have happened in the 60s and 70s with the NHS is what happened to both my parents recently. So my mother had a heart attack.
Right.
And ended up being put on a trolley in an accident and emergency unit, but out on the corridor with 30 other people on trolleys. It was Dickensian. This was like a third world country.
Oh, yeah.
And she got hardly any treatment at all while she was there. Now, when she eventually got up, and this is the apex of the NHS for me laid bare, when she eventually got into the heart unit, she got incredible treatment on the NHS, didn't cost her anything. She got fixed up and repaired. Turned out she had a blocked artery and she was home in 48 hours and was great. My father broke 6 ribs recently. Again, the same story, just waiting on trolleys and so on. This is going on all the time.
Because it
cannot deal with the volume of people.
We have the same problem in our country. All the community hospitals are closing, right? And our emergency rooms are unusable because of illegal immigration. I agree with you completely. I'm just saying, if you have a country whose main source of pride is its like healthcare system.
I don't think it is.
Really? Because in the 50 years I've been coming here, no matter what you say, they're like, have you heard about our healthcare system? And it's like, I thought you were about the greater glory of God and like subduing the world for civilization and the English language and our literature and our history.
I certainly think we're about, listen, we'd certainly, I checked a few stats on the way here.
Yeah. Oh, so I bet you did.
Well, this Christmas, give the gift of sleep with 8 Sleep. Everybody needs good rest for most of their days, but few know how to actually get it. 8 Sleep's Pod 5 is the answer to that. Pod 5 is a smart mattress that automatically regulates your body temperature throughout the night. It's proven to deliver up to an extra hour of good sound sleep every single night. That will change your life if you get it. Plenty of people on our staff use the Pod 5 and they are very psyched. That's why they're so focused and well-rested. I can see them humming around right now. The full body feeling of comfort, that's what keeps you in the sack and fully crashed out. We recommend it strongly. 8 Sleep, they're on their biggest sale of the year this month from November 10th until December 1st. That is 8sleep.com/Tucker. The code is Tucker. $700 off. There's a reason it has won the Men's Health Sleep Award. It's the best. 8sleep.com/Tucker.
For example, we bat way above our strength in things like music. Okay, of the 8 biggest selling artists in music history, I think I'm right in saying that 5 of them have come from
I believe
the
that.
UK. From the Beatles to Elton John.
They're a very musical people, as we often say.
We're a very artistic people. We're a very scientific people.
Yes.
We lead the world, actually. A lot of our universities are in the top 10 in the world. So comparative to our size, which is about a sixth of the size of the United States, maybe between maybe 5th and 6th, but comparative to our size, we continue in many areas to bat above our population strength.
The Brits in the Middle East, in Dubai specifically, are like one of the engines of the economy.
Right.
They're amazing people. I'm actually one of them.
Right.
Half. So I agree. You'll never get me to say the Brits aren't unusual.
But the qualities you cited, funny enough, that does resonate with me. We have lost a lot of the qualities, I think, collectively as a country, which did make this country great.
And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I agree with you about that, because I do think that it's become a bad thing to be patriotic about our country. There's a huge war about waving the Union Jack flag. I never see that war raging in the same way in America, right? There's a lot of, I'm not giving an example.
But it will. That's why I'm doing this interview.
Well, it may. You know, it was very interesting when I did Celebrity Apprentice. It's where I met Donald Trump. And this was back in, 2008. And the organization that I raised money for, because it was a charitable thing, you had to have a charity, was the Intrepid Fallen Heroes Fund. And they had a base down in San Antonio. So I went down there. And I remember distinctly coming off the plane and seeing a load of people with flags. And I couldn't work out what was happening. I knew it wasn't for me. American flags. And it turned out that they were there greeting every single serviceman and woman who came off the planes from whichever war zone they'd come from, because there was a big center there, a lot of military service people living in San Antonio, a lot of them also being treated for serious injuries and so on. And they were just applauding and thanking them for their service as they came off these planes. You'd never see that anywhere in the UK. That just doesn't exist as a concept to do that. I was very struck by that. And, I do think America generally is a lot more proudly patriotic than we've become. We've become almost ashamed of being British in a way that I don't like. I think we should be prouder of ourselves and prouder of what we've achieved and prouder of what we could be. But one of the reasons why people don't feel that pride, I think, is because we've had a succession of what I would say are pretty hopeless politicians
who dragged us
into a place where people don't like it.
I get it, but maybe you got those politicians because the people hate themselves.
I don't think we hate ourselves. I think we've had a shockingly mediocre tier of politicians.
But I mean, the sort of increase in British masochism, which has famously been part of your sexual retinue for centuries, cane me more. No, that's just true. As you well know,
I don't know a Brit. You Americans love a bit of spanking.
Not in the boarding school way. But anyway, whatever the point is, that has increased dramatically since the Second World War. And I have done a couple segments on the Second World War that have been very kind of shallow and not even really talking about the details or whatever. You're a Holocaust denier. Obviously, I'm not. Whatever that means. Hitler killed a ton of Jews. That's terrible. So that's been a diversion, really, that specific conversation from a much more important, broader conversation about what that war did to the West. And I think it's totally objectively fair to say the West, by which I mean your country, which is really the seat of the West, has been in decline since the war. So, like, what is that? Do you know?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's been in decline since the war. There was a lot of recovery after the war. It was a devastating war. I mean, you know, one of the most extraordinary aspects of that war is that Winston Churchill, who many people here to this day believe, you know, pretty well single-handedly rallied the morale of the people here to help us defeat the Nazis, albeit with obviously America's help, that he, in the end, at the end of the war, he got thrown out of office because so many people came back to a really bad lifestyle, in a lot of impoverishment, a lot of, you know, homelessness and so on.
Well, maybe, were there other reasons? Like,
no, it was, that was why they took it
out. Did Germany attack you first? Is that what happened?
What do you mean?
Did Germany attack Britain? Is that how you got into a war with Germany?
Germany attacked Poland.
Oh, but not the UK.
No.
Oh, okay. Because that detail
they wanted.
So you voluntarily joined the war.
Yes.
Okay, right. I'm not defending Hitler, of course, but it's just a fact that you weren't attacked. So when you say that Churchill saved Britain, well, Britain got into the war voluntarily.
Well, not voluntarily. One of our neighboring European countries was attacked, and it was quite clear that Adolf Hitler and the Nazis wanted to take over Europe. This was an existential threat to Europe and therefore to the UK. So you're arguing
that he would have come for the UK?
100%.
Even though
I think it's very naive to
your politicians and he and there's like not one person who was saying that in 1939-40.
Well, no, Neville Chamberlain wasn't because he totally misread what was going on. Winston Churchill completely read correctly what was going on and came out of the wilderness to actually come and save us. I think
you signed a treaty with Poland that locked you into a course of action that destroyed your country. I'm just saying.
You don't honestly think the Nazis would have stopped at Poland?
I have no idea. I'm just saying.
Yes, you do, Duncan. Come on.
I'm just going by what contemporaneous sources said. I have no idea. Hitler invaded Russia, so obviously that's deranged and incredibly destructive. So I don't know is the truth. He was focused on communism. No one doubts that. This was not a communist country. But I'm just saying Britain voluntarily joined the war. It was a war that you were not involved in and you got in. But my question is, why did it destroy Britain? I don't understand. As the victor nation.
It didn't destroy Britain.
Well, look outside.
Look outside.
We're in the city of London.
Hang on. There's Tower Bridge. It's the Tower of London. Magnificent.
Well, it changed London.
Why do you look at this and see a wrecked country? I don't.
Well, I don't see an English country. So we're in the city of London now.
What do you mean there? What do you mean by that?
It's not, well, people whose ancestors built Stonehenge are not here anymore. So the city of London is 36% white, and that's happened in the last, I don't know, 40 years.
But England is about 70% white.
England.
Yes.
Okay. Well, it was 99% in 1945.
Okay, so we've evolved.
But you're on the way to becoming the minority in the country. So no one wants to say that. I think you can get arrested for saying that here.
Well,
that's not white supremacy. This is the indigenous population of the country.
Well, it's a statistical fact that I think by 2100, we will be a minority white country.
2063 as of today.
Well, I've read a bit later.
But these are dynamic numbers, so they change.
Yeah, but here's my question for you. So what?
Well, let me refer to the beginning of our conversation when you said that the people who live in a country define the character of that country. And then you said, yes, all the things for which we were famous and in which we had pride, like our stoicism, our concern for others, our tidiness, the cleanest country in the world. Now it's pretty filthy. All those things change when you get new people moving there. You said that. I mean, you're the racist, not me. So I'm just using I'm using the parameters that you said.
I did not say that that was down to
you didn't say
white people coming to the country.
Well, that's who lived here.
I don't believe that.
No, but that's what you said.
No, I said there was creaking pressure on public services.
No.
From the increased
but
population.
You also maybe foolishly admitted the truth. You could get arrested for this, so I know the stakes are high. But you said that when the people who live in a country change, so does the culture, which is like the most obvious. It's like when it rains out, it gets wet. That's not a controversial observation, but it's illegal here because it is true. Mm. And my only point is not against, I've already said, I like the Bangladeshis better than I like the liberal whites in your country. A lot more. They've never yelled at me. I'm not attacking them. I'm just saying the things that made Britain, Britain, England, England. Is there still an England? I have no idea. Those are going away because there are different people living here. And if you think that those are good things in the same way that the Swedes or the Chinese or the people in Burundi and Chad, they like their culture. It's their ancestors' culture. And now it's gone. And like, why can't we say that's bad?
Well, because you may think it's bad.
It's good?
I love living in a very multicultural
city. But you're rich. I mean, you're rich. And you go to the white parts of London, and they're exactly the same as they were when I was a child. I've been coming here for 50 years. They're exactly the same. What neighbor I was saying is exactly the same.
Which do you think is a white part of London?
I'm not going to tell you.
Well, that's a little test for you. Which area of London do you think is white?
The one I'm staying in right now. The one where my relatives live.
Where?
I'm not going to say.
No, you don't want to say because you know that I'll immediately say, come on, there's loads of non-white people living there.
I'm not against non-whites.
There's no exclusively white area.
Okay.
There's not.
Christmas season is here, and although it's a bit of a cliche, it really is important to keep Christ in Christmas. Should we focus on cookies and presents or on the reason we're doing this, which is Jesus? Obviously, the point is Jesus. That's the whole point. That's the only point. And all the decency and good cheer of this holiday comes from Jesus. The Hallow Apps Pray 25 Challenge reminds us of that. It features Chris Pratt, Gwen Stefani, our friend Jonathan Rumi, and many others. This 25-day challenge guides you through Advent and helps you keep your focus on the true reason for the season, Jesus. Experience the nativity story where Jesus brought peace and calm to a world in chaos. And that's exactly what we need right now, is peace and calm and still. And Jesus is the only one who brings it, period. Hallow is thousands of prayers and meditations and music to help you connect with God all through Christmas and after, including several Christmas original songs and albums. There's a whole world on Hallow. It's like unbelievable. It's changed our family's life. Check it out. You will not regret it. Get 3 months for free at hallow.com/Tucker. Experience greater peace and stillness this Christmas.
I am not now, nor have I ever been. And let me just restate, I think I have a lot more in common with the Pakistani cab driver than I do with the average Guardian staffer who's white. I'm not inferring anything.
Well, you're referring the more multicultural that Britain has become in terms of other ethnicities coming to live here, then the worse it's got. And I'm saying those two things, in my view, are not automatically linked.
And I agree.
There are lots of white people who behave very badly in this country.
Well, I've met them, right, and they yell at me. So right. Yes, I just for the fifth time, I have more in common with the sincerely religious Pakistani cab driver than I do with anyone who works at the Times of London. Mm. That is just a fact. I don't like those people. I don't want to eat with them. And they're white. So all true. All I'm saying is the qualities that made Britain the greatest country in the world were linked directly to the people who live here. And so, of course, by definition, multicultural means less of some cultures because there's dilution of the dominant culture. And you've conceded that
already. There are lots of people who are non-white, who've been born and raised in this country, who've contributed brilliantly
to the success of
this country, who've risen to the top positions in top industries, whether it's music.
So defensive.
Arts.
I'm not attacking the non-whites.
Because you're
worried about getting arrested. I get it. And by the way, I'm not worried about being arrested. When they rush in the door with no guns, little bobbies with their sticks.
They might if they know you're here.
Probably.
I'm not worried about being arrested.
I got hassled at your airport again.
And really?
Always.
Well, for being Tucker Carlson.
You know, we don't know. It's just, it's the AI, I guess. But...
No, wait, I love that. What happened to you?
You know, it's like, go see the attendant. And by the way, the attendant was some Pakistani woman who's like, oh, we're so glad you're here. Which I don't think I would have gotten from the liberal white lady. So again, once again, I'm not attacking anyone on the basis of their race.
No, but you're saying that our culture has changed because we've had other cultures come here. Is that your position?
Well, it's not my position. It's a fact. And you just said
I think
it's better. So what about British culture didn't you like and has been improved by new cultures?
Tell
me, what didn't you like before? What are you glad is gone from the Britain you grew up in?
Let me tell you. If you came to London in the 50s and 60s, the food was crap. Absolute crap.
Well, it was that way in the 80s when
I was
here.
Right. Now, we have some of the best gastronomy.
Amazing. Some of the most expensive, too. I wonder, is everyone eating there?
And, no, I can tell you.
I paid $1,000 for dinner last night.
You're a wealthy man leading a very wealthy lifestyle.
Holy shit.
Why
all
don't you
the
come
food
with
here
me?
Is...
Come with me to Brick Lane. Come with me to Brixton. I'll give you a proper meal.
I love it. And you and I will go to the tough parts of town and eat street food. But
I can give you a great
meal. But are you really saying
I'll take you to the top end of Portobello Market. Right, you come with me. If you want to risk death walking up to Portobello Market, I'll take you and give you some street food and you'll spend
£10. I've been to Portobello Market. And by the way, just in point of fact, I'm quite popular there. I will say that.
in Notting Hill.
I feel no fear at all.
In Notting Hill?
Yeah, I will
really?
Eat. Oh man,
they're so liberal there.
Don't even get me going.
Even I get a hard time up there.
I think they secretly love me because they know that they've been naughty. But whatever, my theories aside, here's my point. What about British culture apart from the boiled menu, which was repulsive? Do you think, but the national character, and let me say it again, tidiness, self-restraint, selflessness, courage, fairness.
Yeah.
The British system was imported around the world on the basis of one concept, fairness. From the Magna Carta.
I think a lot of
Has this become a fairer society? It's become completely unfair. You put fucking Julian Assange in prison for years without charges. Because the CIA told you to.
We have had a massive rising issue with the suppression of free speech.
Which is a fairness issue.
But that has nothing to do with ethnicity or
culture.
Oh,
really? So what does it have to do with, do you think?
It has to do with a very ridiculously draconian view of what free speech.
But where does that come from? You've never had that.
From governments.
No, but of course. But those are attitudes that grow from the population, or else you would have a revolution.
That's where you're wrong. The population does not want this suppression of free speech.
They may not, but they keep voting for the fascists every time, whether it's Boris, whether it's Boris, or whether it's Boris.
No.
He's a buffoon. It doesn't mean he's not an authoritarian.
He wants... it's funny you mentioned the word buffoon. So I once...
That's axiomatic. Oh, no,
I'm going to tell you why. No, because I once interviewed him for GQ. And I said, Boris, this is 2008-9. I said, Boris, I've always thought that lurking beneath the buffoon exterior lies a sharp, calculating political mind that wants to be prime minister. He wasn't even a sort of politician at the time. He looked at me and he said, well, you must consider the possibility that lurking beneath the buffoon exterior is an actual buffoon.
True.
So he was right.
No, he was talking...
I can't say we weren't warned.
But the point is, look, it's not like...
He's not a fascist, though, Boris Johnson.
He's an authoritarian.
Yeah, but it diminishes the word fascist when you say that about people. I get annoyed...
Well, what is fascism, actually? I mean, we, meaning the collective West, meaning the Allies, meaning Roosevelt and Churchill, meaning America and its cousins in the UK were fighting against an authoritarian system. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just about race hate. It was about full control of a population. We were arguing against that and fighting against it. Of course, we were also funding it when we sent money to Stalin, but whatever. It was never fully consistent. But that's what we tell ourselves. And now that's what you have. Mm. There were three times as many people arrested in the UK last year for speech crimes as were arrested in Putin's Russia. Mm. And you have half the population. So this is much more authoritarian than Putin's Russia.
No, it's not.
How is it not?
That's ridiculous.
If you have three times as many arrests for speech crimes, it's more authoritarian.
I've not seen that stat. If that is true, it's because we have been so appalling in protecting free speech.
Well, you're appalling. I'm not. Right. No debate there. But I'm just saying, how do you define authoritarian?
The idea that we are living here in a more authoritarian state than Russia.
Those are the numbers.
You don't believe that.
I believe in science, Pierce. I believe in science.
You think England is more authoritarian than Russia?
I think you're more likely to be arrested for a speech crime in Great Britain, indeed three times as likely.
What would happen if you criticized the government? If you went on the airwaves here tonight...
I'm an American. They're not going to mess with me.
No, but if you went on the airwaves here tonight and you start abusing and hammering and mocking and criticizing our prime minister, which, by the way, many people are doing...
I'll give you...
If you did that, what would happen to you?
Nothing.
Exactly.
But what if I said I thought gay sex was disgusting and should be illegal?
And if you went...
Prime Minister. No. How about I'm opposed to sodomy? How's that?
I haven't finished my question. And if you went to Moscow and you went on the airwaves and you did that about Putin, what would happen?
You'd be in trouble.
Right. So there's a difference.
No, because
that's an authoritarian state.
No, that's a straightforward...
This one is not.
That's a straightforward...
This is a flawed democracy.
No, this is global homo.
Global homo.
It is. It's global homo.
What do you mean?
I'm going to tell you. This is a concept that you need to understand. This is
Yes, I do.
Yes, you do. This is the authoritarianism of the present and future. And it's not, it's the feline, passive aggressive female version that doesn't tell you what it is. They don't march into your town in jackboots and put a rifle against your face and tell you to obey. For sure. It's right. Much more straightforward.
And they kill you.
It's a
And you fall off a building suddenly.
Oh, you kill tons of people. You kill tons of people.
I don't disagree.
Oh, yeah, you do a lot. I know. Yeah. I know. Right. So let's stop with the killing people because you kill tons of people. But as you well know, because you know the people who do it. And I do too. No, I'm saying there's something more offensive about an authoritarianism that will not admit what it is. So instead, people are arrested here and thrown into jail. And I've been to Belmarsh Prison. It's awful.
I've been there.
It's awful.
It is.
But you walk in and there are all these signs about Trans Acceptance Week. Mm. It is fascism wrapped in the Human Rights Campaign rainbow logo. It's not any different from what we were fighting against.
Well,
it's arresting you for saying something they don't want.
I certainly believe, and this has been my big criticism of the woke left. I wrote this book called Woke is Dead, which is more an aspiration than a reality at the moment. But the point I was making was that the woke left became, in the end, like the very fascists they profess to hate most. They literally behave like fascists.
Yeah.
Anyone that deviated from their worldview.
I don't want you to devalue the term.
No, I'm not. I'm explaining the hypocrisy of the left.
No, I get it.
I think we could probably agree with is if you start to behave like the very people you claim you hate most, you are a brazen hypocrite.
It's not just the left; it's the right.
Well, the right's doing it.
Unfortunately,
I agree. Some of the right's doing it as well. I agree. Hypocrisy is hypocrisy, isn't it? Wherever you see it. And I do think that this the way I would categorize what's happened here is successive governments, right and left, have pandered to a weird sentiment driven by very vocal but small numbers of people that we have to start getting into the suppressing free speech business. And it's been a catastrophic failure, which has diminished this country.
But why?
What we're beginning to see is the coming out of that. And I'll give an example. When Graham Linehan, the comedian, the father Ted genius, right? And he decided to take on this whole trans issue head on. And a bit like J.K. Rowling, he got shamed, vilified, cancelled. He lost everything. He lost his family. He lost his jobs. He lost everything. He became unemployable, completely cancelled. And he did some jokes on X back in April. And they were just like harmless, right? He talked about a trans woman coming into a woman's space.
Harmless to you as a non-trans person, but genocidal to the trans community.
Which again is ridiculous. So he did a joke about a trans woman coming into a woman's space and he said, what you should do is kick him in the balls, right? It was a joke. It was an ear knuckle joke. If you're oversensitive, you go, ooh, most people just laughed and took it for what it was. So that kind of joke that wouldn't even be considered remotely controversial 10 years ago. When he arrived at Heathrow Airport several months later, he was arrested by 5 armed police officers and taken off to the cells. And I just found that utterly shocking. So I'm not pretending there's not been a massive problem about free speech. But what was interesting and encouraging was the public backlash. Hence my book title, Woke is Dead. The public backlash was so ferocious that within a week, the police said, we're not going to prosecute Linehan. And actually, they said further, we're never going to prosecute anyone for this kind of thing again. That was a moment when I went, we're finally getting a bit of sanity.
So the trans thing is absurd. It's so absurd that it's easy for people to say that's absurd. Mm. What's actually happening here, as I think you know, is a society is being changed by its leaders against the will of the population. The population hates it. They've always hated it. No population wants radical demographic change. None. And so it's been so profound since 1997 under Tony Blair that you're not allowed to note that your country is being taken from you, okay? So you can criticize trannies all you want. You cannot criticize Israel, as you know. You're not allowed to criticize demographic change, and you can't criticize the rest of the fabled LGBT community. And if you don't believe me, listen to this story, which is it's unbelievable. This is from the Daily Mail, which is kind of a ridiculous publication, but
I love the Daily Mail.
I do too. I there's a lot about it I like, but I mean, it's absurd. But anyway, Elizabeth Kinney from Tranmere. Have you read about this?
Go on.
She's a mother of 4. I think she's a nurse and she gets beaten up by her boyfriend. He beats her up. She goes to the hospital and she texts someone, a buddy of hers, a friend of hers, a girlfriend of hers, and describes the man who beat her up and sent her to the hospital as a quote, faggot. It's a faggot. Mm. And she's arrested and convicted of a hate crime. The guy who beat her up is not arrested or convicted. And then she goes through this whole kabuki, which is now required, where she prostrates herself before the judge. I'm sorry, it was not a homophobic rant. By the way, you're allowed to be homophobic if you want in a free country. You can have any view you want. But no, because she used the word faggot, she's arrested, and the guy who punched her in the face was not. That story tells you everything.
Well, I don't know that story. If it's exactly...
Daily Mail, baby.
Okay.
Pictures of her and everything.
I'm not doubting it. I'm just saying I need to look into it. But if that is how you've told it, obviously it's ridiculous.
Would you say the word faggot on camera?
No.
Why?
Because I
you don't want to get arrested, do you?
No, I don't want to be arrested.
Because it's so harmful to people?
No.
Is that like gay bashing? What's wrong with that?
No, actually, my whole issue with the whole trans debate, for example, is you don't need to slide into actually saying derogatory stuff about trans people to make the point that women's rights should be protected. You don't need to...
Well, I agree.
So what? I don't believe...
No, but it's a magic word.
I don't believe in needlessly sneering...
Well, I'm not smearing anybody. I just think...
But why would you use that word?
Faggot?
Yeah.
I just did.
Yeah, but would you
faggot,
use
faggot,
it?
Faggot.
Okay, but why?
And I'm using it because you're not allowed to because you're...
I'm allowed to.
Go ahead.
I don't want to.
Say, I love gay people. Faggot.
No, I'm allowed to. I just choose not to.
This chick just got arrested for it and convicted.
Oh, right.
So that doesn't have a chilling effect on your ability to...
Look, there are people watching this who will be offended by the use of the word
chick. I'm sure
they
will. I'm not anti-gay. I never have been. No, I can use any freaking word I want.
Offended by the use of the word chick.
Chick. Okay, whatever.
Dare you
up.
Be so sexist comparing women to chicks.
How about this? Let my life, the way that I actually live and treat people, be the testament to my heart. That's how I feel.
Right.
And if I've mistreated someone,
I don't
that
think
is
you,
a
you,
sin.
I don't believe, I don't, you correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe you would call a gay person a faggot to their face.
Not in a mean way. Right. By the way, the only people I ever hear use the word faggot are gay.
Right.
Ever. Just like the only people you ever hear use the N-word are black.
Right.
Period.
Right.
So if you spend any time around gays, and I have spent a lot of time around gays,
really?
Who, well, of course, I work in television. I mean, half our staff was gay. They're great people. And they're the only ones who ever said, faggot. Ooh, he's a faggot. I'd be like, ah. Oh. I have no need to say the word. Actually, it's kind of an ugly word,
but to be totally honest.
But
you know the argument they use, which is...
They don't use it. They use the word constantly. I've worked with them my whole life.
Well, I wrote a column, for example, about the use of...
But I'm not allowed to use it, but you are. I don't play those games, dude.
Listen, I'm going to make a point. I wrote a column for the Mail, actually, about the use of the N-word. And the Washington Post did a huge report on this and said that every day on Twitter, as it was then, the N-word was used 500,000 times, but almost exclusively by... young African-American men.
So okay. It's cool.
Well, they would argue, and I understood the argument.
Yeah.
It's their, they've reclaimed that word.
I don't believe in universal rights either. I think certain standards should apply to certain people based on their blood, but don't apply to everybody.
What do you mean?
I mean, that's what you're saying,
no,
dude.
The standards have to be absolute, or they're not standards. I was about to make my argument that I made in the column.
Sorry, you're getting me so wound up.
No, but I actually made the point in the column that I don't think that works. I don't think you reclaim it. What you actually do is you empower genuine racists to say, well, if they're using that word, I'm going to use it. And so I felt it was an entirely self-defeating reclamation of that offensive word. I would say the same to gay people. If you constantly use the F word in your own...
What's the F word? Well,
you know what? We've just been saying it. If you want to keep saying it, you keep saying it. I'm not going to keep saying it.
It's worse than fuck, isn't it?
To a gay person, from a straight person, yes.
From a straight person, but not from the gay person?
Well, that's my point. I understand the reclamation argument that they put up. That if they...
Reclamation?
That they're reclaiming the word and they're disempowering it.
That's fine. I don't care.
Slur.
I think that's kind of amusing, actually.
I just don't think it works. I think the more these words get used, then the more...
But is it really about words? I guess that's kind of what I'm saying.
Because I think it empowers people who are genuinely racist or homophobic to then use those words.
Okay, they're genuinely racist and homophobic. I don't care. Why don't you pick up the trash? Okay, that's kind of how I feel. Mm. And stop letting people from countries where they can't speak English come to your country by the millions. Like... Don't the material things matter? Don't the actual things matter? Your father lying on a cot in a public hospital?
I do think that people, when they come to a country, should try and learn the language.
Of course. But I'm not attacking anybody. I'm just saying the whole debate about what words are allowed and by whom is, first of all, insane because, again, standards mean nothing unless they apply to everyone because we believe in human rights, not group rights or ethnic rights. We're against that because we're against the Nazis, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. But it's also a distraction from what actually matters. If your dad is spending hours, I'm sure he was a Briton, he spent his whole life here paying taxes,
mm-hmm.
and that's what he gets. It's like we should be having
completely unacceptable.
But it is acceptable. That's the problem. No, and instead, not, we're arresting that girl for saying faggot.
Well, the two things,
or as we say here, the F word.
Yeah. No, I like I said, I don't know that story. I'll look into it. But I do. If that
does she look like a faggot user to you? She looks too nice.
Come on.
I'm sorry.
Don't behave yourself.
No, I can't. But
I know you can't.
They're making me want to say that because it's so outrageous that you would arrest someone for a word.
No, I agree.
And like we actually have to put ourselves at risk to stop.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Well, then help me now. Let's have a moment of self-liberation.
I think you're okay? Beyond help.
Hold my hand. We're going to say faggot together. You ready?
No, we're not.
Do you say gay and retard?
Huh?
Do you say gay and retard?
I say gay. I wouldn't use the R word. I wouldn't. I personally wouldn't.
Are you
it's my choice? By
do
the
you
way,
think it
I'm
should be legal to abort a Down syndrome baby?
I am exercising my free speech right not to use that word.
I totally agree. I actually don't use the N word ever because I think it's ugly. I just don't.
So
like
by your own,
I don't.
Batard, you're being.
I kind of agree. I'm not even. I'm mostly making fun agree, to make we? A point. I actually think that we should not kill people because they have Down syndrome. I think they're beautiful people, and I think when you get to heaven, it'll probably be filled with people with Down syndrome because they are pure in spirit. And I'm not joking even a tiny bit. I really believe that. But people who think it's okay to genocide everyone with Down syndrome through that alpha fetoprotein test are lecturing me because I'm using the word retard. It's like, maybe we're missing the real argument. That's all I'm saying. Does that make sense?
It does, although I'm pro a woman's right to choose what to do with her body.
Including
and bear in mind that
aborting someone because he's retarded?
In this country, to be clear, abortion's a very settled issue.
George Galloway doesn't believe in
it. Well, no, but honestly, it's not a contentious issue. In America, it's a ferociously contentious issue. It is simply not one in this country.
Well, maybe that's part of the problem.
I don't think it's a problem at all.
Who's having the abortions here?
Well, a lot of people have abortions here.
Right. It's pretty overwhelmingly, though, people whose grandparents lived here. Have you ever noticed that?
Whose people? Who what?
It's the native population having the abortions. It's not immigrants not having a ton of abortions. And if you look at the numbers.
I don't know the demographic.
But that's true everywhere. And I... Just a deeper issue. So, like, what is the loss of the will to live? Why, if you're not having, and you're a huge exception to this, I know you've procreated, as have I, God bless us both, but a lot of native-born Brits do not have many children, if any. It's also true in the United States. It's especially true in Canada.
Well, I think this is becoming a massive issue, and Elon Musk has been right about this.
Yes.
The biggest problem is not, as we all assumed, overpopulation right. in the world, but underpopulation, because a lot of people now, especially as the changing way society has gone with many more women working and so on, that the number of children that are being born actually in places like the UK and the US is reducing quite markedly projected for the next 50 years. And you're seeing in some countries in Asia, for example, it's getting catastrophically low very fast. And this is going to be a massive
South
problem.
Korea.
Yeah, it's going to be a huge.
There will
problem.
Be no South Koreans in 100 years. There will only be North Koreans. What does that tell you?
Well, it's not a good moment.
No, but where's that? I totally agree with you and with Elon. And again, I feel like we've all done our part to reverse that trend. Mm. But I feel like we spend no time asking, why is this?
Well, don't you think it's as simple in most cases as the changing work practice? If you went to the 1950s.
That's part of it, yeah.
1950s in the UK, most women didn't work. Now, when women go out to work a lot more, they probably don't have the time to have 3, 4, 5 children
as
they used to.
There's no doubt. I'm sure they can't afford it. Childcare is
very expensive.
In the United States, it's more expensive than I think any other expense, but for young people with children. Of course, you're right, but there's also something a little bit deeper than that. It's like it used to be just axiomatic that reproducing was not just your duty, but your greatest joy. That was the way you create the next generation. Continue your civilization, and that has died since the Second World War, and not just in the
I think it's
white world, but but that is like a profound change.
Well, what is inarguable actually? I mean, look, like I said, the population here has gone from 50 million to 70 million since the 50s. The really worrying graph is what happens in the next 50 years.
No, but that growth in population has been almost exclusively from immigration, and true in the United States and Canada is just like a completely different country. Nothing like that has ever happened in the history of the world. Why is this happening?
Well, what, in terms of people traveling around?
No, in terms of people deciding not to pass on their genes, committing mass suicide, because that's what that is.
Well,
listen, yeah, our families lived in this village for 2000, since the beginning of recorded history, in this country, unlike mine, you have a native population.
Because no one could travel.
You're the Cherokee of this island, okay?
I don't want to give you a history lesson, but 100 years ago, you know, everyone traveled by horse and cart. There was no aeroplane. You couldn't leave the country. You couldn't go to other places. But rather like tribes 2,000 years ago, who used to literally just sit in their little area of wherever it may be, eventually they ventured out, and so evolution continues.
I'm for that. I would never argue against that. I flew here, actually.
Yeah, right, of course. Right. So once you're able to do that, obviously people are going to go exploring. They're going to want to try and live in other places. The question then becomes, how enriching or damaging, or both, and in what levels, is an influx of people from other ethnicities, other cultures, other countries? I would say on balance, London in particular has been almost a template, actually, for tolerance and cohesion and multiculturalism at its best.
The stabbings you're talking about.
Well, let's talk about the stabbings. The murder rate in London, do you know what it is compared to any major city in America?
Probably much lower, I would think. Just it's way lower testosterone level here. I mean, you can feel it too.
Yeah, in the that's men's true, room. Actually.
Every time. Oh, I'm aware. That's I'm true. Aware. But look,
you have the worst murder rates.
Well, I know. And by the way, we always have, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of factors for that. And it's one of the saddest things in my country. I would never defend
The murder rate in London, for example, I checked before I came and saw you because I thought you'd
ask. Think London's a better city than it was 40 years ago, 50 years ago?
Well, statistically, the murder rate is actually been plummeting in London.
Do you know
which I'm good. I'll tell you the problem in London. What we really need in London.
Wait, do you think it's a better city than it was 40 years ago, for real?
Yeah.
You think Sadiq Khan's better than what you had before?
I think Sadiq Khan is somebody who's won two more terms after his first, because actually he's not done as bad a job as people say.
Oh, that's the new
standard. Nor has he done as good a job as he would like you to believe. But certainly in things like tackling murder, I give him credit. In tackling things like the clean air, where some of the boroughs here were the most polluted.
You have no factories. You don't make anything. All you do is banking. How could there be dirty air? What are you even talking about? There's no manufacturing. You lost automotive. You lost aerospace. Cool. You lost everything. Steel. It's clean air because people are idle. Actually, they're delivering food to people who work at banks.
There is more traffic now in London than there was even 4 years ago.
I'm sure.
Right.
So it's called tourism.
So my borough, Kensington and Chelsea, for example, 1 in 12 people, there was a big study on this a few years ago, 1 in 12 people were dying from pollution-related illness, right? I had a lot of issues, which I thought were allergy issues. Eventually, I was told, right, here's what you should do. Check your air quality app every morning. When it's really high, don't go out and shut the windows. Secondly, get air purifying machines in your house for the rooms you use. I did both. Guess what? I've had no problem since. And I didn't have any allergies.
Well, that's amazing.
Well,
all it cost was a total destruction of your economy. So why do you think the air was polluted before?
Well,
people were burning.
Our economy has not been destroyed. We're still one of the biggest economies in the world.
What is the economy here? What's it based on?
What do you mean?
Like what's the British economy? I look at the economy of, I don't know, Wales in 1900, and it's like, it's coal. They mines, they dig coal, people burn it. That's what their economy is. Look at the economy of Sheffield or Birmingham 100 years ago. Well, of course, it was steelmaking. What's the economy?
There's still a lot of manufacturing in the UK.
But as a percentage, your economy.
Well, percentage of manufacturing could be a lot less.
A lot less? It's almost non-existent.
Yeah.
Right. So
we still have one of the biggest economies in the world. Now,
but what is that economy based on?
A lot of things.
Okay, what's the main one?
Well, of the city. There's a lot of manufacturing.
That's the main one?
Well, there's a lot of technology stuff going on. There's a lot of scientific stuff going on. There's a lot of all sorts of industries.
You haven't mentioned the biggest one by far.
Well, go on.
It's lending money to people. It's banking.
Banking, yeah. Okay.
We're in the City of London right now.
Sure.
How many things are being made in the City of London other than debt?
It's one of the financial hubs of the world. We're right in the city here.
I know we're sitting in the City of London right now, run by Sadiq Khan.
Right. But again, it's not as bad as people think it is.
But hold on. Is that really an economy? If your economy is real estate, that's London's other big economic center, is buying and selling and leasing pieces of property again and again to different people. Nothing's being created.
But that's not true. That's not true. We are creating things here. A lot of things.
Like what?
There's a lot of money.
Baratta. Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of money because people from around the world stash their money here because it's a system based on fairness.
There's a lot of manufacturing, not as much as there was 80 years ago.
How much is in London, man, your biggest city, the dominant city?
I don't know the percentages, so we'd have to check.
Pretty much, unless you're talking about like burritos being manufactured or whatever, I don't think there's really any.
The bigger problem for us is not what economy we're doing. It's how we manage the economy.
So it doesn't matter where the money comes from?
No, it does. But successive governments have dragged us to a place where we have almost zero growth. Without growth, you can't have a successful, thriving country.
That's not true. Have you been to Japan? It's like the most successful, thriving country in the world. It has had no growth for a long time. Not real growth. And we've gotten these lectures from the bankers for like 30 years. Japan is dying. You ever go to Japan? There are four-year-old girls in the subway alone. There's not one speck of litter in all of Tokyo, and it's one of the biggest cities in the world, 12 million. It's an incredible society. It's the opposite of New York, London, Baltimore, Detroit. It's incredible. I know you've been there, and I know you've had these naughty, forbidden thoughts like, wait a second, I thought we dropped a bomb on them. How are they so great?
No. I like going to Tokyo. But
no growth. How'd they do that with no growth? No. I was assured by libertarian economics, if we had no growth, things would be bad. Look at this.
I like going to Japan, but I wouldn't swap it for London.
Right. Fair. You're English. That's kind of the point. Right. This is your homeland.
And I genuinely do love London.
No, I bet you do.
When I lived in America full time, I really missed a lot of the
I hope so. This is where your ancestors are from. I get it. Yeah. That's the whole point. That's the whole argument I'm making. It matters where you're from. The culture really matters. It's not about growth. It's not about any of this crap. It's about, am I on the same page with my neighbor? Do we have something in common? Do we have the same gut instincts about things? Those are the most important questions there are.
But economic prosperity raises all the ships.
Has that been true here?
It should be true.
Is there more poverty in London now than there was 40 years ago?
There's more child poverty.
Yes, I know.
In fact, the child poverty rate is worse here than it is in America.
A lot worse.
The general poverty rate.
So how is this so great, even though they have Barada?
The general poverty rate is actually lower than it is in America, but child poverty specifically is still worse.
Is there anything that matters other than child poverty?
Probably not.
Not really.
I agree.
Look, I'm not slagging on. I love your country. I really thought a lot about this since I was so mean during that conversation. I was just wounded because I feel like the destruction of Britain has effects on our entire Anglo civilization.
Did you actually look out and see a destroyed country?
No, this is beautiful. I mean, this is, this is the rich part of town.
I could take you to Manchester, Birmingham, Glasgow, Cardiff. I could take you to.
How are they doing?
They're all doing great. Much better than you think. Honestly, Tucker, you'll walk around, you'll see the pubs packed, the restaurants packed, the theatres packed. You'll see people having a great time. Go out on a Friday night in London. Go to the Devonshire in Soho, the best Irish pub in town. Four deep in the streets. Everyone having a great time.
I love that.
20,000 pints of Guinness being sold every week.
I could say that there are so many things about London I really like. I've been here 3 days again, visiting relatives.
Have you felt threatened walking around?
No, not at all.
Of course.
Again, who's going to do anything? Pakistanis are all super nice to me and the whites are all kind of craven and sad. No, you're totally safe here, man. It's not that at all. It's just that it's dirty.
It's what?
It's dirty.
Oh, come on. American cities aren't any cleaner than London.
They're dirtier. They're dirtier. And it's one of the great tragedies. And I can't get anyone to care.
I agree.
Nobody cares.
I agree.
So that to me, if I went to your bedroom right now. I'm not going. especially not after the whole faggot thing. It's like I'm uncomfortable. I get it. And you said you were so liberal. But if I went to your house unannounced, I bet I would find it tidy and clean.
Yeah.
And I bet I would find out it's because you have a housekeeper. I don't even know if you do, but because you care, because you have self-respect.
Right.
That's why you shave in
the morning. I agree with that point. I think the self-respect part, I totally agree with you. We've lost that. We've lost the British were legendary for our politeness, our manners,
yes,
our charm. That has gone. We've really.
Dude, that's
really,
everything.
No, but I totally agree with you. So when you talk about the cultural stuff that I really regret that has gone out of fashion, if you like, it is things like that. It's things like, you know, a British person used to speak well and open doors for women and things like that. Now that's frowned upon, right? The kind of screaming radical feminists have made it almost a taboo thing. Young men in particular do not know how to behave. When I'm out with them, I notice they don't stand up when women walk into a room or to a table. They don't open doors for women and stuff because they've been conditioned to think this might be toxic masculinity and all this bullshit. That kind of stuff really worries me.
Do you ever wonder where it comes from? Because I know the answer, but I'm going to
You're going to say it's multiculturalism, but a lot of the other cultures that have come here actually have far more politeness.
I agree. I agree completely.
So that's the
That's exactly my point, is that the cost is to the invaded. Mm. You're being invaded. You already said there are boats showing up uninvited. That's called an invasion. It's happened a lot through history. And it's the people who are conquered, who are vanquished, who suffer. The immigrants all seem kind of happy. It's better than Bangalore, you know, or wherever.
We don't feel conquered.
Well, but you are, though. No, I mean, if people are showing up in boats in your country, no, I don't know what to do about them. Well, how about sink them?
To put it in perspective.
Lord Nelson would put up with this?
Put it in perspective. In the last 5 years, we've had about 200,000 people come over our southern border. In the last 5 years in America, until Donald Trump got a grip of it, you have apparently 10 million come over the southern border.
Oh, more.
Right. So I'm afraid there is no comparison.
Why?
We have a little problem. You had a gigantic problem.
Let me add an amen, as we say in the black church. I totally agree. And that's why Britain is so interesting, because for two reasons. One, the people who are being invaded and replaced are the native population. They're the Iroquois of the British Isles. They've been here forever. Their ancestors' bones were at Stonehenge. There's no debate about that, though they pretend otherwise, but that's just a fact. So eliminating indigenous populations is like kind of a sin, I thought, but it's happening here and in Ireland and in Scotland and in Wales. A. B.
Hang on, they're not being eliminated.
Of course they are. Look at the birth rates. What are their birth rates?
That's not an elimination.
Of course it is. Over time it is.
But that is people taking a decision about their own lives and not having enough children or as many as they used to have.
Well,
that's not an elimination. No one's forcing them.
No.
No one's telling the white population of this country, you can't have more than one child.
Well, that's kind of the point that I'm making.
No, they're not, though.
Well, whatever they're doing, I mean, they're aggressively encouraging homosexuality. You use the F word and you go to jail. No, what is that? If you want to know who's in charge, who can't you criticize? You can't use the word faggot?
No one's aggressively encouraging homosexuality.
This girl went to jail for using a naughty word about gays, dude. They're not encouraging it. What do you think that is?
What's wrong with homosexuality?
Well, if you encourage it and the rate goes up, people have fewer kids. I don't know. Did you do biology?
Well, no. So just to be clear, the rate, most gay people don't have kids.
That's the point I'm making.
Right, they don't.
So if all of a sudden you have more people being gay, which you do,
No, you don't. People don't pretend to be gay.
Do you have the internet?
Huh?
I don't know. I'm not saying they're pretending. I'm saying you've got way more.
Yeah, you're gay, right?
Well, you know, we used to say that, but.
You don't think so?
Well, I used to think that, but all of a sudden
lots of people putting their hand up saying they're trans. That's a different issue.
Oh, it's totally different. It's not part of the continuum. Gender isn't real. Actually, I can pretend.
If you're gay, you're gay.
Well, you know, we were told that, and I believed a lot of things.
Not believe that?
Well, it's demonstrably not true because science tells us it's not true.
People are making it up.
I don't think they're making it up at all.
So what's your point?
I think that you can be moved in that direction through propaganda and pornography.
Come off it, Tucker.
Well, then how do you explain?
Is there anything that would make
hold
you,
on.
Could I make you gay?
How hard do you want to try?
Not hard, I can tell you. Good.
That's the spirit, Piers. There's a limit. Even an open-minded man like you kind of hate the gays.
Could I make you gay?
I make a little gay joke and you're like, oh, I'm not going to be gay.
Why are you using a gay slur? That's fine.
First of all, the context matters. As I've told you, I mean, that's like coffee table conversation between the gays I work with at Fox. Faggot. Mm. So if it's okay with them, it's okay with me. It's just, it's sort of like racism. Only the whites are upset about it.
You don't actually think people can be persuaded to be gay.
Well, then why don't you explain the twofold or threefold increase in self-identified homosexuals in the United States?
I can. They used to be repressed. It used to be illegal in this country until the mid-60s. Mm-hmm. You literally went to jail.
So all through
Hang on. You literally were put in a prison cell if you were openly homosexual.
That was more here, actually. You guys did Oscar Wilde. We didn't. But
it was absolutely shocking.
Yeah, it was terrible. You ruled the world at the time, and now you're a joke dependent on four known banks.
And you think that's because
everyone's gay, so it's like a great trade.
Allowing gay people to be openly gay is why we wrecked our country.
Mocking masculinity is the fastest
way
to servitude.
Totally different
issue. Ask any Pakistani. That's why I like the Pakistanis here. You talk to a Pakistani cab driver, and you're like, why are you gay? And they will start laughing because they've watched the video, and they're like, I'm not gay. I'm a man.
What's it got to do with masculinity?
Ask a single Briton, why are you gay? They'd be like, well, I'm not gay, but it would be okay if I was. Mm. And it's like, there's no masculine self-respect at all.
You're sounding quite homophobic.
I'm not afraid of gays at all. I'm just asking,
You don't actually think they really exist by the sound of it.
Well, they exist.
No, but are they real? Is their sexuality genuinely
homosexual? Sleeping with dudes? Are they big time.
Well, and women. Are they attracted to members
of
their own
sex? Mostly dudes. The lesbian thing is way overblown.
Actually, there are a lot of lesbians.
How many?
I haven't counted, Duncan.
I love this conversation.
Not recently.
This is so great. You're going to get so fucking arrested after this. It's going to be unbelievable.
No one's arresting me.
Okay.
No one's arresting me. But I'm just curious whether you think the gay people actually are gay or whether you think they've been somehow turned.
For the third time, I think it's completely sincere.
Right.
Completely sincere.
So what's your problem
with it? The question, I'm not saying I have a problem with it. I'm merely saying you get fewer children when more people are gay.
No, you don't.
Well, actually, you do.
More people aren't gay. Just more people are able
you don't
to admit they're gay.
Oh, but hold on. You don't get
they
fewer.
Well,
hold
gay
on.
People.
Stop. Okay. Was it like 30% of the population always, like in Roman times? For about 30%, would you say?
I'm just saying.
No, it was like this is.
The falling birth rates have nothing to do with
if you have
gay
more,
people.
If you have more gays, do you have fewer children?
We don't have more gays.
We've got way more gays.
No, no. We have more people who are not afraid to say they're gay.
They're letting their freak flag fly.
They are actually gay, Tucker. They just haven't been able to admit it.
So why isn't that the case like in Asia?
What do you mean?
I mean, I don't think there's no Asian country. And they're not all like putting gays in jail. Malaysia might be. Korea's not. South Korea. Why is their self-described homosexuality rate so much lower than yours? Japan, same.
Because culturally, it is not a thing.
So it's genetic. You think it's genetic?
No, it's cultural.
No. People become gay.
But last World Cup.
Wait, but how do people become gay?
Let me give you the World Cup is coming.
I'm talking about soccer.
I'm telling you why.
I want to talk about the gay thing.
I'm telling you why.
How do they become gay? Why are you gay?
One in four countries in the last World Cup actually outlaw being homosexual. It's a criminal offense. Do you think that's right?
I don't care.
We should care.
Okay, I really care. You've got people arrested for using the word faggot. That's who I feel sorry for. This chick from Britain.
So you feel very exercised about that.
She's in Great Britain. She's not in some primitive theocracy.
Are you not as exercised about people being arrested and put in a prison cell for their sexuality if they're gay? Why don't you feel as angry about that?
Because it's not my culture. It's not my country. It's not.
Come on.
I'm not for arresting any. I'm for arresting very few people.
You think people should be arrested for their sexuality?
Of course not.
Why? So you agree with me?
I will, also a talk show host, you're not going to get me off my path. And my path leads to this question. How do people become gay?
They don't become gay.
What? Are they born gay?
Yes.
How does that work?
They're born gay.
How?
They have a sexual attraction.
I understand the manifestations, the symptoms.
The symptoms?
Yeah, the symptoms. The symptoms. The symptoms of my...
They're born gay.
Okay. So that means it's genetic.
You may not want to
acknowledge
that.
No, I'm just asking how it works.
That.
So there's a gay gene.
You said you worked with lots of gay people.
Hold on. Right? There's a gay
gene.
Did
you not have this conversation with actual gay people?
Yeah, a lot of them say, I got molested, that's why I'm gay. In fact, a really good friend of mine who's gay said, I got molested, that's why I'm gay.
You think all gay people are gay because they got molested?
No, I don't think that. But I am wondering, I don't know the answer. But
I would say the absolute vast majority of gay people are gay because they are actually attracted to members of their own sex.
No. But again, that's a manifest. That's
a natural thing.
You're not. Let's just do science for 30 seconds. Of course, you're right. That's the definition of gay. I'm attracted to someone of my same sex.
Do you believe that?
Do I believe that they're attracted to people from their own sex?
Yes.
Well, obviously, they have sex with them.
Okay.
So that's what attraction.
So what's the big deal? Why'd you care?
My question, because the self-reported incidence of it has risen. So we were told 30 years ago, and I have a good memory, it's about 10%. But the actual
Because people were being mercilessly mocked for it.
Listen. But the self-reported rate was like 5%. Then it's 10%. Now it's like 30%. Mm. So my question is, were they all born that way? 30% of a population is born homosexual? As an evolutionary matter, you tell me how that works. How do you reproduce?
It's not 30% of the population.
In the United States, in a lot of places, it is. 30%.
It's not here. Not 30%.
It's way higher here based on the vibe.
What is way higher is the number of people compared
but
to
30. But where does it come 30 from?
30 years ago.
Is it genetic and where's the gene?
30 years ago, gay people were persecuted.
I know. I've heard the story.
No, they were
We were commemorating Stonewall the other day at my house. I'm on board with all of this stuff. Yeah, the Candlelight Vigil, we always do it every year. Every February 9th, I arrest my kids in this kind of mock Stonewall thing.
What do you do if one of your kids...
They say, I just want to be free, and then I unlock the handcuffs.
What happens if one of your kids says they're gay?
I love my kids no matter what. I love my kids no matter what they did. They're my children.
Would you think someone had turned them into a gay person? Or would you accept them as a natural
I'm a journalist,
thing?
So I actually wonder what the real answer is, not the bullshit propaganda answer.
What would you say to them?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking you. You say people are born gay.
I'm asking you what you would do.
You don't want to answer because you don't have an answer because you know that your answer is bullshit.
No, my answer is correct.
that they're born that way.
They're born gay.
Then is there a gene for it? And you know there isn't. Tell me a gene. It's the code that determines your physical and emotional characteristics. You have blue eyes because you have a gene for blue eyes.
Right.
If someone is gay, then there should be a gene that we can isolate and say it's the gay gene. And science has been looking for the gay gene for a long time. And my question is, where is it? I'm waiting on my gay gene. I ordered a gay gene and it hasn't arrived yet. Waiter, where's my gay gene?
Supposed to be like you might be.
Yeah, I'm waiting for my gay gene. Mm. And if there isn't a gay gene, then it's totally within bounds. It's not homophobia. It's not hate. I don't want to arrest people in Liberia or whatever the hell you're talking about. I just want to know, what is this? And no one will answer the question. And I don't know why. It's weird, right? Why can't we have a non-emotional conversation with, why are you gay? As they say in Nigeria, why are you gay? Mm. And no one will answer it.
Well, in Nigeria, it's a criminal offense to be gay.
I don't know.
You think there aren't gay people in Nigeria?
Of course there are. I haven't been there in a while.
Of course there are gay people in Nigeria.
Where does it come from?
But they can't admit
And you can't
gay,
answer the question.
Because if they admit they're gay, they get put in prison. That can't be right? You're a guy who doesn't believe in that kind of thing.
Putting someone in prison because he says he's gay? Of course I'm against that. Right. I mean, please.
Not because he says he's
but
gay, but because he's
gay.
Pointing
to an extreme third world... You guys don't bring Nigerians here, do you?
We have a lot of Nigerians here.
What? You import gay haters into your country? I thought you were for the gays. No, I'm serious. Why would you import? You're just telling me that the Nigerians are bad. You said you basically hate Nigerians.
As you know, Tucker, there are lots of countries around the world with different laws to here, different
But why rules, would you import them? If you love the gays,
ideology.
Why would you import people?
When they come here, they have to abide by our laws. That's how it works.
And your values. So what are those values?
No, actually, you don't have to come here with our values.
Oh.
You have to come here and abide by our laws.
And your laws include not using the word faggot. That's against the law.
I just think, why would you do that and just be offensive for the sake of it?
I totally agree with you. I never use that word. I'm just being honest. I never use that word. Right. Ever. In fact, I think it's maybe the first time I've used it since the 80s. Mm. But it's not a matter of custom. It's a matter of law because this woman, mother of four, wound up in prison for it. So if that's going to be the law, it's obviously like the most important. It's so important to you that people not insult gays in any way. You can insult straights.
You can insult gays as much as you like.
Well, you can't. You get arrested and you go to jail.
I don't know that story. I'm going to look into it. But as I said to you,
I'm going to hand it to you right here. Okay. Here it is.
I don't think people should be arrested for using words like that. I agree.
There should be social disapproval.
You should be allowed to be hateful under freedom of speech.
Amen. I totally agree.
You know, if you're not actually inciting violence against people, which is a different thing.
I agree.
We should agree. If I say, go and stab Tucker Carlson, and he's staying at this hotel right now.
I agree.
It's a criminal offense.
I totally agree.
There's already a law and statute in both our countries for that.
So I can tell that we were both born in the 1960s because we totally agree on the underlying human right, which is the core human right, which is the right to conscience and self-expression. And both of us are on exactly the same page. Where I lose you is your whole world is crumbling around you. I'm worried that's going to happen in my country, which is why I'm hassling you.
My whole world's great. In fact, it couldn't be
better.
The
restaurants are better. I totally get it. That's what matters.
If I'd known you were in town yesterday, I'd have taken you to the Emirates Stadium to watch my football team, Arsenal, beat our North London rivals
4-1.
It was the most joyous, magnificent experience imaginable. You would have seen a multicultural crowd roaring as one.
It's incredible.
Jews, Muslims, white, black,
love it.
Gay,
love it.
Straight. All joined as one as Arsenal fans.
It's what the church used to be. Except they charge you admission. I get it. I know what bread and circuses is.
Well, actually, the church used to charge you admission in the old
We had Martin Luther for that, and we were going to fix them. And Henry VIII played along, so God bless you for that. But here's the point.
No, but here's my point. If I took you to the Devonshire for a pint of Guinness, you'd love it. If I took you to Arsenal to a massive multicultural stadium
would.
Of fans, you'd love it. 60,000 people, no trouble, no aggravation.
I'm here voluntarily. I love it. I just don't want it to evaporate.
It's not evaporating.
Okay.
We have challenges.
Why aren't you more panicked that thousands of people, by their own admission, the admission of the British government, are arrested every year for saying words, not threats, words.
I am. I've expressed
So why doesn't someone try to overthrow the government? I don't understand. How can they treat you like slaves
if
you
they carry
up
on down that road?
Well, they are carrying it on. It's thousands a year, and it's getting more.
Then they will be voted out of office.
Voted
I guarantee
out.
It. Yes. That's how
Is
we
that
do.
What Winston Churchill would say? I think Winston Churchill said, even if a strong man tries to take Poland, a country we've got nothing to do with, it's not even close to here, we're going to risk the lives of our citizens to liberate Poland.
Mm. Poland is closer to here than your home is to New York.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
So it's all relative. So if,
well, it's a tiny little Lego Europe. Right, so I get
if Maine got attacked, would you expect people in New
Poland
York to help?
Poland has nothing
you?
To do with
it. If Maine got attacked, would you expect people in New York to help you?
It's the same country.
Okay. But you're actually further.
Kind of a big distinction.
Well, we were
my country's quite large.
We were part of Europe, the same continent.
You were not part of. I call bullshit on that.
Really?
In 1940, you were not part of Europe.
You don't
Europe.
Think, well, of course we're
you
on
were
Europe.
Definitely not part
we're
of
on the continent of Europe.
You are not on the continent. You're an island, dude, off the continent, separated by a body of water. Do you know what it's called between you and France? Yes, it's called the English Channel.
I know what
you
it's
are called. Not part of Europe. That is not
we
true.
Are part
My
of
ancestors
Europe.
Lived here. You were not. You were England.
We are part of Europe.
France was considered exotic and crazy. That's where the prostitutes and the cheese eaters lived. It's only the brainwashing of Tony Blair and all these technocrats since who have convinced you're European. You're way better than European. You're an ancient Germanic Celtic people who ruled the world. Do you remember that in your wooden ships? Anyway, but the point is, no, I'm serious.
You did. Some crap sometimes.
No, it's,
anyways,
it's totally it's real.
Crap, but come on.
With the mass from Maine, white pines. But the point is, your country went to war to preserve human rights in another country you had nothing to do with, but human rights are evaporating in your own country, and it's cool because you have soccer games with foreigners at them and good burrata.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying maybe something about the heroic British spirit has been diminished with time. That's
but
all I'm
but
saying.
But there is a very lovely, quaint notion being built up in the United States, driven by people like Tommy Robinson here.
Who's Tommy Robinson?
You know Tommy Robinson.
He seems like a fraud to me.
Well, he's not even Tommy Robinson. His name's Stephen Yaxley. It's not even his real name. He's also convicted of multiple crimes. Thuggery, fraud.
I don't even know anything about him, but he doesn't seem like he's that into
little,
Britain.
We would call him a little shit stirrer, right? However, he
but
has...
But the real people here, the actual Britain
But this
here.
Idea that he's driven, that we're on the verge of some sort of civil war here. Do you feel that when you walk around?
No, because that's my point. You're so passive.
But not passive.
They take your human rights away and you're like, oh, defending Ukraine is so important. We're so proud to have defended Poland's territorial integrity 80 years ago. It's like, great. Yeah. I'm so glad.
I'm very proud of that.
Apparently. But it's all a kind of displacement where you're taking your own frustrations with yourselves and your own cowardice and sort of living in this Walter Mitty world. We're like, no, actually, we're brave. We're going to defend Ukraine. It's like, what about defend yourselves against the monsters?
What's wrong
with taking
defending Ukraine?
It's like eighth on the list. Defend yourself. Defend your human rights. Sure. They can't put you in jail for saying naughty words.
Sure.
Period.
I agree.
So march on the Capitol. Get these people out. Scare them.
Yeah.
Do to them what you did to the Germans in Poland, which you would like to do to the Russians in
but the way
Eastern
it works,
Ukraine.
We are a democratic society with a democratic government.
How is it democratic? Well, nobody wants
when
the
a
invasion.
If a government overreaches, and I think on free speech they've lost the plot, if they do, they will get, I can guarantee you, voted out of
when was the last time Britons voted for millions of foreigners to come to their country?
Well, you don't. You vote for a government that makes
decisions.
Well,
you don't ever vote for that. So the biggest thing that's ever happened in your history, nobody voted for.
People flag up what their policies are going to be. But actually, what it's been is a systematic failure to control our borders going back, I would say, 25 years. That's really what's happened.
Just all I'm saying is it doesn't seem democratic. It doesn't seem that's what the people want at all.
I agree. It's now become a massive issue. And the big issue, actually, is because they put a lot of these so-called asylum seekers, and many of them are not, the economic seekers who want a better life here. I don't blame them. It's a great country to come to. But a lot of them are being put in really nice quality hotels. And they're being processed, sometimes for 2 years, 3 years, they're living a very comfortable, luxurious life in neighborhoods where there is real abject poverty. And that is what is causing a lot of unrest. And I get that. And I have great sympathy with the people who live in those areas who are really struggling to feed their kids, who are seeing these people coming in on the boats illegally and being put in fancy hotels. That has to stop. And you also have to process these people a lot quicker for their sake and for the country's. Are you a genuine asylum seeker? I never want this country to be a place that rejects genuine asylum seekers.
Why?
Well, because actually I believe that we have a duty to take care of people who are genuinely fleeing.
How about your own people?
Well, what about fleeing war-torn countries where we started the war? What about people?
Stop starting wars. What about, you're doing it again.
Okay, but one of us opposed the Iraq war at the time and it wasn't you.
I've been atoning for it ever since. I was one of the worst defenders.
I led the campaign here against the Iraq war. It cost me my job in the end. I led the
good
big,
for you.
I led a front page assault on
you
that.
You should
for
stick with
year.
That. You should stick with that.
Well, I agree. I take a lot of. I like to look at each war in isolation. Well, I do.
I get it. Piers Morgan, I know you've got a job. You've been so gracious in defending your country.
By the way, I meant to start with this. Until today, I had no idea that you appeared on Dancing with the Stars.
I didn't. That's AI.
Somebody tweeted the clip today with two friends of mine, Len Goodman, sadly no longer with us, Bruno Tonioli, ripping you a new one.
Of course.
For your dancing. I don't really think
their attacks had much to do with my appearance.
You are many things.
Stars. I'm just suspecting.
There was a point. You didn't really do much dancing. And as Bruno put it, the problem started when you actually danced.
You know, honestly.
Has your dancing improved?
My dancing is pretty good. I have a little trouble taking instruction. But, you know, I would just say what they always say when the nude pictures of the porno tape emerge years later. I was young and I needed the money. Okay. Piers Morgan, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for spending all this time.
Welcome to
Great to see you. It is a lovely country, actually. I just have to say that.
Go and have a walk out there. Go and have a pint in the Devonshire. I'll take you to the next Arsenal game. You'll love it.
Thank you. Christmas is back, and so is our merchandise shop at TCN. Visit TuckerCarlson.com to see what we have to offer, and it's awesome. Everyone has a long list of people they need to shop for this Christmas. Our new line can help you brighten the day with gifts they will actually love, not the kind they're going to throw away or thank you for, but not mean it. Actually good stuff that's great for everybody. Ornaments, wrapping paper, Christmas sweaters. For real. The TCN shop has everything you need. Dozens of new styles and designs perfect for the gift giving and spreading the Christmas spirit. That's TuckerCarlson.com. We hope you have the very best Christmas.